Hi, I'm Rhonda Began, one of the executive leadership coaches at Living Wholehearted. And I love what I do as a coach, especially in our cohort setting. That's why I'm excited to tell you that we are starting a 2-year women's executive leadership cohort in April of this year. And I don't want you to miss out. You might think as a leader, there's no way I can take 2 years to do anything. But we designed our cohort specifically to be doable for the high-level leader. Through one-on-one coaching that is easy to schedule, to once-a-month virtual group coaching, and then 4 amazing retreats at our Living Wholehearted Lodge and Retreat in beautiful Sherwood, Oregon, in the heart of wine country. We will look at who you are and how your story matters. We'll look at how you're wired and why it's important to be who you are. And then we'll look at how you have the potential to impact not just your leadership, but your family, your community, and your world. Hope you join us. If you think of your life, your capacity like a bucket, like a tank, the place where you're leaking the most energy is probably the place where you want to block up and begin.
Welcome to the Living Wholehearted Podcast, helping leaders live with integrity.
Well, hi, Deborah. It's so good to have you back on the podcast.
Hi. It's so good to be back.
Yeah, I know. Jeff always seems to miss our times together, but that's okay. It means I get more time to ask
questions. We get more talk time this way,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Okay, well, we're talking this time about your latest book around soul care. So whenever anyone writes a book on soul care, we'll just speak from my personal experience. I wrote a chapter on burnout in our book, Shrinking the Integrity Gap. And as I was writing the book or the chapter, I realized I was in burnout. And the whole book is about practicing what we preach, right? Shrinking the integrity gap between who we say we are and how we actually live. And so it was the way that God used his teaching me to teach others to help me to take a much needed sabbatical at the time. So soul care is very near and dear to my heart. So talk about your journey in writing this book and what you've been learning about soul care.
Yeah, it was really interesting how it all came together. I think the initial thought came from the fact that I've been working with a lot of incredible high capacity clients who are really doing significant things for the Lord. I mean, we're talking executive pastors, CEOs, people with nonprofits, and I was seeing so much burnout. Mm-hmm. And it was just preventing people from doing all that God calls them to do. People at the height of their ministry, but struggling. And it's interesting because I consider myself a high capacity person in some ways. I am efficient and I like to get things done. But ever since I was young, I would say I was very aware of my limits and setting boundaries around my life. I'm a high boundary person. And I actually think part of that is compensating from my childhood because I grew up in a culture, the Middle Eastern culture isn't very good at boundaries. It's high on relationships, low on boundaries. And I really saw the detriment of what that could look like. And I never wanted that for me. So I've always kind of been a high boundary person. And sometimes you take that for granted. You think that everybody's a high boundary person, but that's not actually the case. Boundaries is something that you really have to learn to protect what God has called you to. And so that was the first part of the formula of, wait, there's a lot of people who are struggling with burnout. The second part was personal for me, where I felt like this is the preventative maintenance. This is what keeps us able to do all that God has called us to do. And it's something we have to be really intentional about. And I love to get things done and I like to think ahead. But for me, soul care was the message of slowing down and savoring life, being more present than I am what's next, you know, rather than what is God doing next? It was, what is God doing now in this stage of your life right now? And are your eyes open to it? Are you savoring it the most that you can? And I was just telling you, I'm in a season of life right now that is very full, but it's such a beautiful season of life. I have a child in each stage of life. I have a toddler, an elementary schooler, a middle schooler, and a high schooler. And on one hand, that can be overwhelming, right? There's days it's like, ah, what is going on here? But on the other hand, it's such a rich season. And depending on my level of fullness or emptiness is how I will see this season. So when I'm feeling empty, it's an overwhelming season. But when I'm feeling filled, it's such a rich season to savor. And so I feel like God gave me soul care as a message for the season that I'm in right now. I want you to care for your soul so that you can keep doing all that I've called you to do and not burn out and not get to that point where you're at the top of your career, but have nothing left to give. I don't want to get there. And I really want to be intentional about being healthy in this season that God has given me. So I guess you could say it's my best effort at staying filled so that I can keep pouring out.
I love that, Deborah. And I love this idea. Well, first, let me just remind you and our audience, like, I love the kindredness of the Middle Eastern connection that we have, because I don't always get to talk. We come from a little bit of a different nuance, more mine being Lebanese and Syrian. But the boundary piece is often a cultural part, whether that's our family of origin.
Right.
It can also be a response of trauma, right?
Right?
And so the combination, sometimes systems have trauma.
Yeah.
And so trauma begets trauma. I was just talking to a Korean American client and talking about generations of Korean trauma and how that's playing out in, you know, her family of origin. And so I love just thinking about your own story and where boundaries modeled, was soul care modeled. And often we are doing the pendulum swing in response.
Right.
And so for me, the being productive and performance was a family of origin. Add that to the Western Christianity worldview, which isn't necessarily biblical, but it's how much can I do for God?
Right.
And so that squeezes out the gift of presence, which is what you were speaking to, and being able to see where you're at in your stage as good and actually being all that God had intended versus waiting until retirement or till the kids get to a certain age or till you get that certain, you know, person hired on the team so that you're not as busy.
Yeah, this is all we've got. This right here, this moment is all we are guaranteed. If we get the next moment, thank God for that, but it's not guaranteed. And it's like, how do I want to live these moments? Do I want to function out of a place of fullness where I'm pouring out of the overflow that God has given me? Or am I constantly on E or nearing E, or maybe not even aware of where I'm at until something breaks down? And you realize how intentional you have to be to live in this kind of way. It's not a natural progression. It doesn't just automatically happen when you become a Christian. In fact, just because you're a Christian doesn't mean you're healthy. Most Christians aren't actually healthy. And so it's the process of becoming healthy and whole. And, you know, as you know, I'm a licensed counselor, but what really inspired this book for me was looking at the life of Jesus. And how intentional he was to stay filled. He was so good at honoring his human capacity. He was fully God, yet fully man. And he chose to honor the limitations of his human body, I believe, to really show us what it looked like to honor who you are and honor the fact that you're limited as a human being. And not only that, I really believe that because Jesus poured out in such a significant way. He was so intentional to have such significant filling. Mm-hmm. And I think we go through seasons of life. You know, I'm in a fuller season right now with different stages of life, with different kids and different ages. And I don't think that means we live life less, we pull back from life, but I do think it means the level to which we pour out, we need to compensate by filling up. High levels of pouring out require high levels of filling up. Otherwise, things get out of balance. And it's people who are the busiest that are like, well, I don't have time for soul care. Well, so you're the ones that need it the most. If you really are functioning at that level, high levels of pouring out require high levels of filling. And yeah. So what does it look like for us to be intentional in the way that Jesus was intentional? And I found 6 rhythms looking through the Gospels that were significant, probably significant for me personally, but also rhythms that I feel are psychologically sound as well. Like, we teach these things, but the fact that Jesus practiced them just took them to a whole new level for me. Putting on the lens of soul care and reading through the Gospels, things that I'd read millions of times before. Well, maybe not millions, but you know what I mean.
For the point.
And for the first time, it's like, whoa, I never saw it in this way before. When you look at it through the lens of soul care, you see how intentional Jesus really was.
Yeah. You know what's interesting, Deborah, is soul care is becoming more normalized. I'm on the West Coast. I'm up in the Pacific Northwest. So we've been talking about soul care. This is where spiritual direction has come from. Yeah. But the rest of the country particularly has seen it as maybe a dip, not even Christianity in some ways. So you're bumping up against especially high capacity leaders, church leaders. You're bumping up against a belief that says, are we talking self-care or soul care? And Jesus really, he died on a cross. He sacrificed. He left it all on the field. So let's before we start going to those 6 things, talk a little bit about why this isn't self-care, but how soul care is different and actually is a biblical worldview.
Yeah. Well, first of all, what we're talking about right now is what prevents us from practicing soul care. And it's 2 different things that prevent us. Number one, we talked about earlier, family of origin. I think oftentimes the roles that we played in childhood follow us into adulthood. And there's different personality types who tend to struggle more with soul care than others. For example, firstborns tend to really struggle. It's like they are born to please and fill in the gaps and look for the needs that need to be filled. They're overly responsible and carry that into adulthood. And you become a people pleaser. You become somebody who's filling in the gaps. You become someone who's more focused on the needs of others than you even are aware of your own needs. Mm-hmm. Another group of people who struggle with soul care are people who come from a home where there was some sort of chaos, some sort of high need around them. And so when you've got high needs around you, such as a parent who's an addict, a sibling with a disability, a high level of siblings, maybe you've come from a family of 12, and whatever it is, you focus on the fact that there are much higher needs than yours. And so you have a tendency to decrease your needs because you want to keep equilibrium in the family. And those are the type of people who grow up into adults who struggle with soul care because they're so used to putting their needs on the back burner. So family of origin issues, past issues, trauma, culture that we talked about. But the second thing that really prevents people is theological misunderstanding.
Right.
And it's exactly what you said. It's like, well, aren't we supposed to be selfless? And what about focusing on the needs of others and loving others? And none of that is untrue. But we can't serve and love well out of a place of emptiness. We think that the opposite of self-obsession is self-neglect. But really, when you self-neglect, you become empty, depleted, exhausted, fatigued, tired, burnt out. You've nothing left to give. And bitter. Not only that, exactly, bitter, resentful. There's mm-hmm. so much tension in relationships. And what's interesting about that is when you're at that point of emptiness, you become so self-centered because the only person you think about is yourself and how bad you feel. And it's not doing the exact opposite of, well, I don't want to self-obsess, so I'm going to self-neglect. It's about being healthy. Hmm. It's about staying filled. And if you look at scripture through that lens, you'll see it clearly. It's all about balance. Even the verse, love your neighbor as you love yourself. There's a lot of controversy. Well, what does that really mean? Does that mean you're supposed to love yourself? But the truth be told, it's the underlying assumption that you're going to know how to care for yourself and love yourself so that you can love others in that way. But we live in a culture where because of trauma, because of past, because of brokenness, many people aren't good at that part. They're so empty. They're so depleted. They're so self-neglecting. And we're not talking about manicures and pedicures and this superficial, like a lot of times people think of self-care. They think all these superficial actions, like who has time for that? How selfish. Instead of doing missions, you're going to go get a pedicure. Like that's what people imagine. But we're not talking about superficial actions to alleviate a pain point. Like, oh, I'm having a rough day. Let me go get a massage, or let me go get a pedicure, or let me take a hot bath. Those things are not bad, but they are not getting to the root of the problem of burnout, the problem of emptiness, the problem of stress. Mm-hmm. So soul care differs from self-care, and that self-care is superficial. It is a superficial solution to a pain point, whereas soul care is a long-term solution. How can I stay filled so that I can keep doing what God has called me to do, so that I don't bump up against these pain points time and time and time again? And really, ultimately, it's about being healthy.
It's so good. It's a good distinction, because honestly, in working my clientele, being similar to yours, high capacity leaders who are doing incredible things for the Lord, they're often because of what you named, the oldest child, or living, coming from a high needs family where they learned that my needs don't matter. So that's really right. Your starting point is that, right. You know, First John, we're told you can only love because he first loved us. And so learning how to sit in that love and to really go to the root of what we need, not the superficial quick fixes, which a massage is great. I mean, I'm all for one.
Yeah.
But it is a momentary solution versus this long, steady. So, okay, let's go back to the six. You talked about six, but I don't think you started to explain those quite yet.
Yeah.
So walk us through those six.
Yeah. So rhythms in soul care, such as the rhythm of Nourish, which focuses in on the life of Jesus, as well as science, psychology and neurology, with regards to physical things such mm-hmm. as nutrition, hydration, and movement. And a lot of things that we take for granted in our spiritual journey. Sometimes we get to the end of a long day where we haven't had a sip of water. We're completely dehydrated. We have a headache. We're grumpy and irritable. And we're like, this is spiritual warfare. When really, it might not be a demon. You might just be dehydrated. Like the enemy is probably sitting back and like, hey, thanks for your help. You're great at self-sabotaging. Because we're not aware of what it looks like to take care of our temple. And why that matters is because you cannot go to Judea and Samaria and the ends of the earth when you're sick and tired and depleted and dehydrated and malnourished because of your own self-neglect. And I don't think we take the responsibility seriously enough of what it means to honor this temple. But it was incredible to look at Jesus through the lens of Nourish and to see how acutely aware he was, not just of his physical needs, but also of his disciples' physical needs before they were even aware. You know, and he responded to the signals that his body was sending him to stop and get a drink, which is what led him to the the Samaritan woman to begin with, when he would stop and say, "Hey, let's get some breakfast. It's time to eat," you know? And all throughout scripture, Jesus being acutely aware of honoring this temple so that he could continue to do what God had called him to do. Something we could all get a little bit better at.
Yeah. You know, to that point, Deborah, it's often the very first thing I'm doing with clients is, especially my really busy go-getter type clients, is to work on just simple things like you going to the restroom when you need to go to the bathroom and getting food when you're hungry. Simple, simple things, but to the point you're making, like Jesus, who had a lot on his plate, some really important things to do, was really willing to slow down and to break bread and to nourish his body, and even drinking water. How we know as counselors how drinking water really helps with anxiety and mood regulation, obviously prevents headaches and things like that as well.
Yeah, so it's incredible that these simple acts can go such a long way. And it's also incredible how easy it is for us to neglect them and focus on what we think are the more important things. So soul care means that we keep that in balance. I mean, if we want to be healthy people with healthy spirits, we need to start by having a healthy body and a healthy brain. And if you're even just a few percentage points dehydrated, there goes the healthy brain part, you know? So what does it look like to honor your body through the rhythm of nourish? And so we dive into those three things in much greater depth, and how we can practically begin to apply that the way that Jesus did.
Love it. So nourish. Okay, what's number two?
Connect, which is the rhythm of life-giving relationships versus ministry relationships. The rhythms of having good friends and being good friends and investing in life-giving community, assessing what is a life-giving relationship from one that isn't life-giving, and really just taking inventory of what our relationship health looks like, and then looking at the life of Jesus and how he did the same. I think the thing that stuck out to me in that chapter, there's so much I could say about each of these sections, but one chapter in particular under that rhythm was the idea that Jesus didn't just give to his friends. He also asked to receive. And many of us, especially caregivers who struggle with self-care, who struggle with soul care, it's easy to give, but to ask to receive is a whole different level.
And it's more vulnerable in some ways.
Very much so. Honoring our needs and being able to invite people in, vulnerability leads to intimacy. So for those of us who are only giving and not receiving, we're preventing intimacy in so many ways. And so assessing Jesus's friendships and how he was a good friend, and then taking inventory of our own life-giving relationships is connect.
So good. It is also, I mean, it's interesting to even define that often with the caregivers and the ones who are really rocking it in terms of doing a lot for God. But at the end of the day, when you're kind of like, who's your give and take people?
Yeah.
Versus who do you just pour out to? You'll notice that there's probably not as many of the give and take. And being willing to receive can take years to practice. Yeah. So the grace of that, and in your book, giving opportunities and practice points. But anytime we point to Jesus and go, okay, Jesus did this, then it gives us permission to say, this is very much a part of God's design. Okay, give us one more. Of the six, what would be one of the ones that maybe you struggled with the most, Deborah?
Yeah, I would say that was the rhythm of savor. And I think that was my favorite one by far, because it spoke so directly to my heart. I remember one day years ago, just sitting down in my time with the Lord and asking him, what do you want me to do? What's next for me? Like, what do you want me to do more of? Like, give me this, the next thing. And I'm imagining, like, you know, this next book or this next ministry or something really significant. I really felt the still small voice of the Lord say, I want you to have more fun. And it kind of threw me off because that's not my personality. Like, sure, we can have fun, but like, let's get stuff done, you know? So this was many years ago, and it's really stuck with me. Not only stuck with me, I think it's changed my life. That moment, that was one of those defining moments of my life, of just learning to practice what it looks like to enjoy life. And I don't know how much you talk about Enneagram, but I'm an 8, and that was the day that my 7 wing was born. It was like I learned truly to savor life and how important that is and how easy it is for me to get distracted from just the work of life rather than the joy and the fun of life. So writing that section and looking at how Jesus savored life was just so beautiful. He was so present, so available, so aware, so in tune with the moment and God in it. Matthew 13, verse 1, I don't think I've ever seen it before, even though I've read scripture so many times. It says, Jesus left the house and went and sat by the lake. Period. It's like, what? He just sat by the lake? Like, he wasn't doing anything, like just sitting by the lake. And the beauty of that picture in my mind of Jesus just leaving a busy house and going to sit by the lake, and the challenge of, am I able to just sit and be and be present and connect with God and the people around me, and that be enough? That be enough. And so savor was truly my favorite section to write. It's a section about enjoying life, having more fun. It's about celebration and thanksgiving and gratitude, as well as just mindfulness, being present. So you lump all those together under the umbrella of what does it look like to savor life? And I think that one was the most challenging as well as encouraging for me.
I love that, Deborah. And I laugh because for me, it's less about like conquering something and more about efficiency. So if you look at my story, like I got married a week after I graduated from my undergrad, and then I started on my graduate school. And I just look at my story and I seem to like, if I'm going to do one thing, I might as well do like 3 things. I published 2 books and launched them 2 months apart. Just a really silly part, but in my wiring, we use core values index, but in Enneagram, in my wiring, it's part of the gift that I have, but I also have to really work hard to slow down and go, if I could do 3 things, what's the one thing that I'm going to do? And I'm going to slow down and be very present with it. That's a way of savoring or to celebrate with the Lord instead of being on to the next. And especially as a parent in the home, it's very easy for me to conquer a lot in a day, but to really take those moments to take in my 5 senses and just to be present, to hear the voice of my daughter's voices, or to taste the food that we're actually eating, and not just move through a mealtime too quickly. Right. So I love this idea of savoring and how it really changes our entire way of being in the world.
It really does. It brings, because it's already there. It uncovers so much joy, you know? And I love that you talk about the senses. I actually have a 5-minute mindfulness activity in that section where we talk about taking 5 minutes and going through each sense with something you see right now. And then I link it to a verse about vision in the Bible with something you smell right now. And I link it to a verse about the sense of smell with something you taste, with something you feel, like all the different senses. And
beautiful.
And taking 5 minutes can make such a big difference in your ability to be present and just enjoy what's in front of you.
I love it. I love this gift. It's a resource. And I think it can be for someone who's maybe burning out, maybe someone who wants, like you said, to prevent burnout. You know, honestly, Deborah, I worked really hard to not burn out until I was writing that chapter on burnout. And I think it's one of those things that can sneak up on us in a way we don't, you know, I might look over there and go, well, that's burnout. But really, burnout can look like cynicism, compassion fatigue,
yeah,
just impatience with our kids. It doesn't have to be as big and grandiose as we think. And so you're speaking a language that says you're invited to live an abundant life, one that's right here and now. Mm-hmm. You don't have to wait until the stars align for everything to go as planned, but really just sit and participate with the spirit of what is he trying to show you, to be present, to delight. So as you're thinking about those listening today, what's on your heart, just as you want to leave them with a word of encouragement and a reminder, yeah, especially if they're feeling like, this feels really far for me. Like I can barely take a next breath, let alone do all this soul care thing.
It's interesting because those are probably the moments that we need it the most, you know, when our body's crying out to be cared for, to be tended to. And I really believe it's a spiritual act because Jesus calls us to be a light that shines brightly. But the opposite of a light that shines brightly is a light that's been snuffed, a light that's been burnt out. And not only is this good for us, it's also what God wants us to do, to be a light that shines brightly. And so for those of you who feel it the most, it's usually a sign that you need it the most. And one little step in the right direction, I would even encourage you to start with the rhythm where you feel like you might be the weakest, because that's probably where you're leaking the most energy. Mm-hmm. I actually have an assessment that I created at deborahflata.com/soulcare. And it's just an assessment that you take. It takes about 5 minutes or so, and it will tell you which is your weakest rhythm and most likely why, and how you can begin practicing in that rhythm. Because if you think of your life, your capacity, like a bucket, like a tank, the place where you're leaking the most energy is probably the place where you want to block up and begin. And I think that will actually make the biggest difference. I would not recommend trying all six rhythms all at once. Okay, let's just dive into this.
My efficiency.
Because you don't want to burn out trying not to burn out, you know? Someone asked me, like, is there any hacks to, like, habit stacking these? And I'm like, the question in and of itself is just so ironic.
It's so true.
There isn't. There is not. Yeah.
No.
But I would say start where you're weakest and then build from there.
Yeah. And like any other muscle, it just takes a slow and steady consistency. And pretty soon you're like, oh, this is easier than I had imagined or built in my mind. But the starting is sometimes the hardest, right? Yeah. Of anything. So I love that. Taking your quiz, showing you where maybe you're most pent up and you need some to start there. And then where can listeners find your book, Deborah?
Anywhere books are sold. At Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere books are sold. And you can find out more about all the other books and the podcast and the resources at deborahfileta.com, FILETA.com. And I love hanging out on Instagram and connecting with people and responding to DMs. That's the one place that I choose to put some of my time with regards to all the different social media options out there. So I'd love to connect with you on Instagram as well.
I love it. Well, and honestly, before we wrap up, let's speak about social media here.
Yeah.
Because that's probably the biggest, well, there's a lot of areas that we're all working on. But when it comes to leaders, particularly, and those that are high capacity, it feels like such a pull to have to be there. And so I love that you use the word choose. It's where I choose to hang out. So speak to that. Just the pull of like, it's part of what I need to do for my job, or I love it, but I also, it can create a lot of soul sucking spaces
really
for a lot of people. So speak to that before we close.
It's amazing how so many things, once they get out of balance, become unhealthy for us. Really good things. And I put social media in that category. I put food in that category. I put Netflix in that category. Things that are good in moderation, but then the moment we start using them to numb or fill up, empty things can't fill empty people. And one sign that you are nearing burnout, that you are moving into unhealthy territory, is an increase in the time that you spend on numbing devices, whether that's food or alcohol or Netflix or porn or shopping or social media, like when you start to see an increase in screen time, an increase in calories and sugar, an increase in alcohol, whatever it is a really good sign to pull back and ask why. What is going on underneath the surface? What am I trying to numb? And how can I start to do this a little bit differently?
Very good. I love it. So it doesn't villainize it, but it just kind of, right, again, one of the many ways that we try to numb out and just to pay attention. That's really the invitation I hear at the end of the day. It's just, yeah, saying, slow down, pay attention,
yeah,
and feed yourself with good nourishment rather than the empty,
right,
like leaves, exactly, us hanging.
It's funny because I could give you a list of five things to have better relationship with social media, but I really think the answer is getting filled. Because when I am filled and healthy, all of a sudden those behaviors lose their pull. I don't need to scroll for hours because I'm feeling good and I'm filling up in other ways. Mm. So it's like my approach would be to start by navigating the internal world and watch how your external world falls into alignment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amen. You and I are on the same wavelength. Yeah. And nobody really likes to go that deep. Sometimes they just want the five steps, but
I know
it's temporary.
Tell me how many minutes I should be on Instagram.
Yeah. I love it. Well, thank you for your time, Deborah. I always love the conversations with you, just a kindred sister out there, and really grateful for all that you're doing and bringing health and wholeness and healthy relationships. So Soul Care by Deborah Folletta, make sure you get this book, and it feels like a great gift. Just write a note, like you're not trying to tell somebody they're headed towards burnout, but more of a, right, this is just a way for us to walk with Jesus and to live in a more, to be non-anxious in a more anxious world. Everybody is feeling pulled in too many directions. So wouldn't it be amazing if Jesus followers were going in a different direction where people could sense that we were present, mm, and we were able to show up and to live more fully and to appreciate what is versus always chasing after what we don't have. So, amen, thank you for being here, and I'm grateful for you, Deborah.
Thank you. It's so good to be with you.
Yay. So until next time, grab this book, and you can check out livingwholehearted.com, where you'll find many more of our resources and ways that we can come alongside you in helping you be the leader that you would follow.
Well, did you know that we're not just podcasters? One of the best ways to connect with Tara and I and our whole team at Living Wholehearted is our website, livingwholehearted.com. There you're going to find the books that we've written, our e-courses, executive coaching, organizational development, and professional counseling services. And then one of our favorite things that we're up to these days, our Wholehearted Leadership Cohorts, where we take groups of leaders for 1 to 2 year journeys together. It's amazing. While you're there, for fresh content, make sure that you sign up for our e-newsletter. That's where we're putting out stuff every month that you want to keep close with. So visit livingwholehearted.com.
You can also join us on socials at @living_wholehearted on Instagram, and we are Living Wholehearted on Facebook. You can also follow me at Tara Mattson on Instagram. We love to engage with you personally there, so make sure you reach out. Leave us a review if you're enjoying this podcast.
Hey, thank you for caring about being the kind of person and leader that lives with integrity.
Hi, I'm Rhonda Began, one of the executive leadership coaches at Living Wholehearted. And I love what I do as a coach, especially in our cohort setting. That's why I'm excited to tell you that we are starting a 2-year women's executive leadership cohort in April of this year. And I don't want you to miss out. You might think as a leader, there's no way I can take 2 years to do anything. But we've designed our cohort specifically to be doable for the high level leader. Through one-on-one coaching that is easy to schedule, to once a month virtual group coaching, and then 4 amazing retreats at our Living Wholehearted Lodge and Retreat in beautiful Sherwood, Oregon, in the heart of wine country. We will look at who you are and how your story matters. We'll look at how you're wired and why it's important to be who you are. And then we'll look at how you have the potential to impact not just your leadership, but your family, your community, and your world. Hope you join us.